Hi, this is Tristan Jones, and you're listening to Behind the Panels.
They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 66 of Behind the Panels, the only comic book podcast that sold for less than its cover price on eBay. I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm David McVeigh.
In this issue, it's a huge week of news following the San Diego Comic-Con, plus a comic book sequel to Fight Club, and we remind you about some upcoming events. Then our kick-ass pick of the week, The Wolverine, the latest film from the Fox X-Men franchise and director James Mangold. This is Behind the Panels.
That's been a while since I heard that one.
Yeah, I know. I just thought I'd play an obvious track there.
Very relevant.
But very relevant.
Very
because,
relevant.
Wolverine goes to Japan and has some crazy adventures.
That's very true.
That's pretty much my...
That's it. Review
that's
over.
It for sure.
Thank you for joining us.
Oh, we've got some vintage clips and stuff coming up. And we'll do all that as well. David, yeah, we went to the movies this week. We haven't read anything. Well, we've read a lot of things, but we haven't read a book for this week. But we have gone and seen a movie. I've seen it twice.
I've seen it once. My son went to see it as well. And we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show because I think they may have improved on the last Wolverine movie just a
smidgen.
Yeah.
Also, interestingly, this is the first X-Men movie to not have X-Men in the title anywhere.
Very true. Very true. And it's also the first time that we've had one of the spin-off movies try and bring itself into canon.
Yes.
So we'll have a talk about that as well. We may have to do a bit of a spoiler section.
The previous spin-off movies just should have been shot out of a canon.
Well, and they tried to do canon, but it didn't really work because none of it really made sense timeline-wise.
And then First Class stuffed it all up.
And then First Class stuffed it all up, and we can talk about that as well if you want, but there's some really big inconsistencies there as well. But this kind of brings it back to the original X-Men trilogy.
But they're going to fix it all in Days of Future Past with time travel.
Because it's a paradox and they can just go anywhere they want with it.
Time travel fixes anything, which is why I'm going to hit up the Wayback Machine and take us back to the 80s, David.
Cool.
The other X-Men are coming. I can sense their thoughts growing stronger.
Come on, Storm. Let's go welcome them. Gorgeous. Hey, I want you to both meet Storm, one of our new members.
Wow. Hi.
We're very happy to have you back, even for a short visit.
It's wonderful to see you again, Professor.
Firestar, over here.
Coming, Cyclops.
This is our other new member, Wolverine.
How you doing? Want a piece of fruit?
I have heard so much about you. But I would like to know more. What was it like to grow up with your fantastic power?
Oh, it wasn't easy. Mostly because of a girl named Bonnie.
Bonnie!
Can I tell you, I am so glad that series didn't take off.
I quite like...
How you doing? Want a piece of fruit?
Yes, the Australian Wolverine.
Yeah, he only appeared a couple of times.
I think he should be called the Dingo.
The Dingo.
Yeah.
Want a piece of fruit? Apparently what they did years later was release a comic. It was like Amazing Spider-Man and Friends or something like similar to the spin-off from that series. And they had Firestar as an in-joke. Firestar just kept thinking that Wolverine was convinced Wolverine was Australian for the whole thing. And interesting, one of the stories we've got coming up is actually bringing Firestar back into the Marvel canon. In that Amazing X-Men book, Firestar's going to be in that. Because Firestar was a creation for that TV show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
and then now she's slowly made it into comics. Now this is going to be her in a headlining X-Men comic. Very strange stuff. That was, of course, once again from Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends from an episode called A Firestar Is Born. I'm cool. Still stuck in 1982, David. I haven't gotten out.
Yeah, you are stuck there, and you're stuck with that series, too.
Yeah.
So,
shake it,
dude.
There's not many early appearances of Wolverine before the 90s, so next week, I don't know, I'll play Banana Man or something.
Okay, fair enough.
David, I think it's time for us to kick off the dust from the Wayback Machine and find out what we've been reading, and maybe even what we've been watching.
Well, looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
So, you will know that a few weeks back, many weeks back now, I said I was rewatching all the X-Men movies. And I stopped at number 2.
You stopped at the last good one.
So, this week, we finally got around to sitting down and watching X-Men 3, or X-Men Last Stand. And it's not a great film, but it has, I gotta say, a shining moment in that film has gotta be the sequence where Kitty Pryde runs through the walls with Juggernaut chasing her. And the final line where she says, who says I'm trying to get away from you, dickhead?
Yeah.
Is just, she is fantastic. She is the perfect, what's her name again?
Kitty Pryde.
Kitty Pryde, played by Juno. Ellen Page, thank you.
I was going to let you struggle there.
You're
going to
struggle
longer
for a while. I have IMDb in front of me, too. You think I just look it up? Ellen Page is the perfect Kitty Pryde. And she's just fantastic. I'm glad she's coming back for Days
of
Future
Ellen Page is the perfect anything.
Well, there's that too. But she was fantastic. And that sequence, that entire last battle sequence where Bobby turns into ice finally and she does her sequence and we've got Angel fly in and save the father. And you sit there going, this is the X-Men we wanted.
It's true, actually, because when I was watching it again, and I did that too, in the lead up to watching the Wolverine,
watched Beast kicking ass. Is just sensational.
He has a really good sequence in that as well. There's a lot to like in that movie, and actually, for the life of me, I can't see why there was so much hatred for that film.
No, and I can understand. I can almost understand the hatred that goes against X-Men Origins Wolverine and so forth. But although I can't really understand hatred towards that much hate towards any film. It's just a movie, dudes, you know. But anyway, X-Men Last Stand is not in the same league as the first two X-Men films, granted, but it's an okay action film that I sat there watching going, boy, it's got a lot of story plot problems, and I really was a little bit annoyed that we never got the Phoenix effect.
I really
wanted her to just explode into flames at one point, you know.
It was a very rushed production.
It was a very rushed production, but it has so many good moments. The Sentinel head in the opening sequence,
the cannonball
special, you know, it's like, it's got all these moments, and you sit there and go, Brett Ratner and his writers obviously did their homework on going, fan moment.
I'm the Juggernaut, bitch.
Yeah. I found out something about that,
That's a meme.
Which I had never known.
No, neither did I.
Apparently it was a meme
online,
and they put it in the film because of it being a meme online, not the other way around. I always thought it was the other way around.
I found that out recently as well.
Yeah, and I thought that was so bizarre.
Here, another interesting fact about that film, because our special this week is, of course, X-Men The Last Stand. Another interesting fact was that Chris Claremont has a cameo in that film.
I did not know that.
I keep missing it as well, but he's one of the guys at the start when Thingy is lifting all the cars up. What's her name? Jean Grey lifting all the cars up.
Is he one of the neighbors?
He's one of the neighbors.
I'm going to go back and rewatch that because I know what he looks like.
He's officially credited as Lawnmower Man. So, to be confused with the 1994 film of the same name.
And funnily, you should bring up Chris Claremont because the other thing that I've been reading this week, and we'll come back to what we really want to talk about in a second, I found Ms. Marvel Volume 1. And I've been loving it. Look at Ms. Marvel Volume 1, which is from the 70s. And what I thought was very interesting was that the first two issues are written by Conway. So it actually says created by, and because Ms. Marvel was a fairly late creation, it says created by Conway with his, and it says it with a little asterisk, and his wife, Mrs. Conway. and he wrote the first two issues. And then who took over after that and wrote the rest of the remaining 25 issues? Chris Claremont. This man owned Marvel at one point.
You know? I've been going back and looking at, starting to read some of the Uncanny X-Men between where we left off last time and the Wolverine yeah. stuff. So I've been reading that bridge. And then as I start to do that, I start to look at all the stuff that he was branching out into in the early 80s, the New Mutants and so forth. But then he was doing all these other specials, like he was doing an Avengers annual, and they all tied into the X-Men. X-Men was obviously his baby.
Yeah.
Well, and wherever he could, he'd sort of bring the rest of the Marvel Universe in line with his vision.
Well, and it's interesting because at the end of Ms. Marvel Volume 1, which was only 25 issues, at the end of Volume 1, Rogue has touched her and taken her powers, and she's become Binary. Because if you know in Uncanny X-Men, we know, is that there's a whole sequence where Binary is in Uncanny X-Men. So this is, it's like Ms. Marvel turned her into Binary and then said, close that series down, put her into X-Men, because he was putting everybody in X-Men. So I just thought that was very, very intriguing. What have you been reading?
Like you, this week I went back and caught up on all of Justice League Dark.
Yes.
Because Justice League Dark number 22 is the third part of the Trinity War thing. So I've also had to go back and look at things like Constantine and whatnot. But actually found myself, it was a series that I never gave a lot of attention to.
I read the first, I don't know, three or four issues and then went, okay, I'm done.
Yeah, look, and like I did with most of the New 52. And in fact, as I keep saying, there's only a handful of issues that I'm still reading. But with Justice League Dark, I actually took the time to go through and read them from the beginning through to when Jeff Lemire took over.
See, and I cheated a little bit because I backtracked it to where Lemire took over because I was bored with the original run. So.
And honestly, you can do that because the first arc is its own separate thing. It's kind of what pulls them together. But to me, it kind of, I like going back and reading those early ones because they were such a disparate group when they started, and the fact that they came together completely unwillingly. Well,
and that's what was,
you know, and they don't even want to accept the name Justice League Dark.
Yeah, and that's what I actually found interesting, and because when I first started reading it, when the New 52 started, obviously, I kept thinking, how is this Justice League? They were all individuals who kind of were working together, but they couldn't stand each other, and they were all fighting with each other.
Pretty much Argus has named them that. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then when you pick it up from when Lemire picks it up, you go, oh, they look like a team now.
Yeah.
And suddenly Frankenstein's joined them, and Constantine had already been with them. There was somebody else. Oh, the purple outfit.
I'm going to let you dangle again for a
little while. Don't let me dangle. What name? Oh, God.
Not Madame Xanadu, no.
No. The one that wears the mask, she's all in purple. I'll forget it. Anyway, those out there, you know what I'm talking about. I'll probably get hate mail.
I've completely forgotten now as well. And I just read the whole damn thing.
So did I, and I can't remember. That shows you how memorable she is.
I think the reason that we read all of this is because of the crossover. And Justice League 22 starts off, Justice League Dark 22, I should say, starts off with kind of a undoing of Justice League 22. In terms of the major WTF moment that was in that issue. Now, that is good and bad. I mean, I don't think we expected all the characters who died in this series to stay dead, because DC, I don't think, have ever managed to keep any of their characters dead for any length of time. and this should be no exception. I mean, let's face it, Trinity War is...
Black Orchid.
Yeah, I've got no memory of that character whatsoever.
I'm looking at it right now.
It's funny how she just has not stayed in my noggin at all. All the other characters have...
The reason that she was at all consequential was because at that one stage she turned into that big Swamp Thing looking monster. Remember, she looked like Swamp Thing, but she was purple.
That's right. She's a purely perfunctory character.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. They needed more boobs on the team, apparently.
Oh, they had a few on there, because they've got most of the...
Well, Zatanna left, so...
Oh, of course she did,
She left to join the normal Justice... She joined Justice League as a support player.
And got some tights as a result.
And got some tights and a new costume.
Some fishnets, rather.
That's right, because Wonder Woman obviously dressed her. and we got Black Orchid.
Well, there you go. I've just like blocked Black Orchid. It's not part of my David. I'm a Justice League Dark traditionalist, and she's just not part of my.
I'm not sure if 22 issues actually ranks as a tradition, but anyway.
Anyway, look, it's actually it's a really fun series. So I encourage people who have sort of abandoned it to go, not just because of Trinity War, to go back and have a look at it, because I actually kind of like these guys.
Lemire
now
added a bit of class to it as well. I mean, if you don't want to start right at the beginning, because I can assure you, and as you can as well.
Yeah, you start around issue 9, I think it is.
I would say the first 5 or 6 issues are boring.
It is very much getting to know your chit chat. I just did it out of habit, mostly because I was also writing a review for Newsarama that I actually thought, I should probably go back and read a lot of this to put it into context. And, you know, now that I've done that, I don't need to do it again. But I do enjoy From Lemire Upwards because he gives the characters character.
Absolutely. Now let's talk about Trinity War. So we've done the backlog. We've caught up on Justice League Dark. We've caught up on Justice League. We've caught up on Justice League of America. You've also caught up on Constantine, which I haven't done yet, I believe.
Almost caught up, but yes.
Almost caught up. Yeah. Okay, so we now come to issue 22. And I was disappointed because, I mean, I'm really enjoying Trinity War, don't get me wrong.
And the issue itself is quite good.
The issue itself is quite good, but I was very disappointed. As you mentioned before, DC can't seem to keep people dead. And it was in Justice League 22, it was a big what-the-hell moment.
Yeah.
And then to just reverse it.
There was 2 what-the-hell moments in Justice League 22. One of them I haven't reversed yet, but I have no doubt that they will. But I suspect, actually, that they might, because there's been a tease of a female Dr. Light turning up at some stage. It was an older concept, actually. It goes back to a few crises ago. And I was actually writing out a list this morning of shows we should do, and I think now is the best time to actually go back and do our Crisis Explained, Crisis Explained.
I think I'm ready to dive into Crisis.
Although you kind of don't need it in the new 52 world, but I suspect a lot of the old concepts will be coming back soon. Anywho, the issue itself is quite cool. So the thing I liked about this particular issue, you often find when you have a crossover series like this, it's kind of like, you know, it's a regular issue of, you know, Justice League, whatever, and then they just mention the Trinity Wars going on, and that's their tie-in. That's as far as the tie-in. What this series has done, and what Lemire has done in particular in this, because I don't think they did it very well in the Justice League of America issue. They kind of made the Justice League of America characters secondary to the story, and it was basically a Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman story.
That's true, yeah.
Here, they actually did a really... Lemire, because he's awesome, did a really good job of tying in the Justice League Dark characters into the main story, but still giving Superman, Batman, etc. a big part of the story, and doing what a good writer does and mixing those plot elements together and making it part of a bigger whole that made you think, wow, okay, these Justice League Dark characters are actually completely essential to this story.
Yeah.
And that is why this was probably one of the best issues, apart from Justice League 22, of the Trinity War so far.
So far. I'm very curious to see. We start the cycle again now, don't we? The next one is Justice League 23.
There's 2 tie-in issues, which will basically be
Pandora issue 2
and Constantine 5, I think. So, and then we start the cycle again.
Be prepared for the crossovers into Phantom Stranger as well.
Oh, yeah, there's a Phantom Stranger one coming up as well.
Because Phantom Stranger has made his appearance in this issue.
For some reason, I have to go back and read all of those again.
I know. I don't really want to. Actually, I read the first 3. I might just go from where I left off.
The question turns up a bit, so I'm looking forward to any Question spin-off series, because I always like the Question.
Now, help me remember, because they did talk about it a few issues ago, but you know what the new 52 is like. Pandora is Pandora of Pandora's Box.
Correct.
The Phantom Stranger is Judas Iscariot and his pieces of gold.
I believe so. Yeah.
Who is the Question?
The Question was... It says... His sin was yet to be revealed.
Ah, okay. That's so right. We don't know who he is.
And he doesn't even know who he is. So, and they've erased all memory from him.
And his punishment is to walk the earth and question everything and find no answers.
Yes, that's correct.
But we know Judas Iscariot because we actually had his name mentioned. And every time he does one of these things, a gold coin falls.
That's right.
So that's the whole, because it's the gold coins that he was paid.
That's right.
For his sin. So the Question is going to be a one-shot, going to be a 3-part series, going to be an ongoing. What are we doing with that? Do we know?
I'm not entirely sure. I have to double check, but I'm assuming there'll be a Trinity of Sin, the Question, coming up at some stage.
And the next question is, in your opinion, what's controlling Superman? I mean, they've got a theory in the comic books, but what is really happening with Superman, do you think? I think there's something bigger at play here.
I think he's missing his red underpants. He wants them back, and he'll never be the same. He's just itch. It's an itch he can't scratch.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's my theory right there.
Can we just talk very quickly, because I don't think we've actually discussed it. I can't remember if we have or not. We'll move on because we've got other things to talk about. Just very, very quickly. Justice League a few issues ago, with Batman and his boxes, which are the antidote to each one of the heroes. And talking to Clark about why he can't have a relationship with Wonder Woman, because he opens the box and there is nothing in the box. And he says, you are the only off switch, basically, to Wonder Woman because she's too powerful. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I thought it was a bit of a cop-out. But I've kind of got a little objection to a lot of the way that they've dealt with this relationship, because now that they've finally, after 70 years, decided to couple up Superman and Wonder Woman, which they've never really done before except in fantasy issues back in the
Golden Age. Where the Kingdom Come and stuff
like that. It's almost as though her as a character is being defined by her relationship with Superman. And I kind of object to that, because Wonder Woman is the strongest female character that has ever been in any comic book ever. Mm. I mean, she there is a strong case to be made that she was a big S&M character. I mean, let's face it.
So you're saying Betty Page would have played her if they'd made the film in the 50s?
Absolutely. I mean, let's face it. There's no question that the 40s and 50s comics, she was tied up, gagged, you know.
By Nazis, man.
in bondage as often as you could find. I mean, let's face it. Her whole shtick is that she has a rope that she ties people up with. Ooh. So
and bracelets.
David, I'm trying to make a serious point here. So I do actually object to that a little bit. I'm curious to see where that's going. That's all on hold, though, because of the Trinity War. So we're going to get back to the box.
Also, the other thing that I find a little
unless that's like kind of the big turning point.
I think it's going to be because it is magic and there's a lot of magic involved in here.
I think actually that could be a hint as to how the Trinity War is going to end. There's only one person, like, you know, there's going to be a showdown between Wonder Woman and Superman. And we've already started to see that, because now Wonder Woman sided with the Justice League Dark
because they're magic. That's right. There was actually one other thing I was going to mention to that, which was that the biggest issue I have with this relationship is that one of the greatest romances in comic book history, aside from Jean Grey and Scott, and aside from Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy, one of the greatest romances of all time is Lois Lane and Clark Kent. Lois has been kicked to the curb.
Look, Lois and Clark is a great... I mean, Steve Trevor and Wonder Woman as well.
That's true, and that's been kicked to the curb as well.
Lois and Clark should be a TV series with Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher. That's
I would watch that.
I think that. I think that there's a difference between trying new things with the New 52 and then just screwing with us. And that's what they're doing at the moment. Yeah,
I think personally, personal feeling, we've mentioned it before, I'm going to put it on the air, I'm going to make it live. Trinity War should end with Pandora restoring the old DC universe.
I agree, but I don't think it's going to happen.
It never happened. No, but that's how I think it should end.
Two other things I want to quickly mention that everyone should read if they haven't read it already. One of them is an obvious one, which is Hunger, number one.
I haven't read it yet.
Which is the new crossover between basically the Marvel 616 Galactus, which is the Marvel main universe. Galactus comes into the Ultimate Universe, and it's a fun issue. It's really good. I like where it's going. I suspect, and I'm calling it here right now, when the whole thing's done and there's a new series called Cataclysm that's going to follow it, the Marvel Ultimate Universe will end.
And the characters that are worth anything, like Miles Morales, will come into the 616.
Because I think Marvel are trying to streamline their universe. They don't need the Ultimate Universe anymore.
And considering that they have only got Ultimate X-Men, the Ultimates, Ultimate Spider-Man now, there is not enough in that Ultimate Universe to keep it going.
No, and they've got, you know, if they want to do Elseworlds and stuff like that, they can do it. And
apparently, Ultimate X-Men's coming to an end anyway, so that's coming to an end. So we just got to finish the Ultimates, the current run, which is Volume 5, I think it is, and move Miles Morales into the 616. Boom.
And you're done.
You're done.
Yep.
You know, and it's like...
I agree. So I'm calling it now. That's what's going to happen. The other book that you should read, and you know you're reading it anyway because we recommend it all the time, is Hawkeye. But Hawkeye Annual Number 1, it's a Kate Bishop story. It is a magnificent issue. It's different artist, but it's the same artist who did issues 4 and 5 of the main series. It's kind of a continuation of that story. It's amazing. It's one of those rare stories with a female character where she's completely feminine and embracing it, but also a kick-ass superhero character as well.
I'm reading that this afternoon, actually.
All without getting into costumes. So it's basically, don't think it's just transplanting Hawkeye into the female thing. That book has always been about the two of them.
Yes.
And I can't wait to see them get back together. But this basically spins off from where she left him, took Pizza Dog with her, and went off to California. So that it's what she's doing on the West. She becomes a West Coast Avenger briefly.
And while you mention that, we have to mention that Hawkeye issue, whatever it was, the one just before the annual, is a must read because it is an entire issue through the eyes of Pizza Dog, which is genius.
Number 11, yeah. There's been one since then, which is 12, but yes, Pizza Dog issue is one of the, if not the greatest issue of the year, because we've still got a bit of year to go.
So we stand by it still. Hawkeye, still best comic book being written today.
And the Eisners and the Harveys and every award ceremony agrees.
Matt Fraction, you are a legend. Come on our show, please.
Yes, please. If you're listening, Matt. We've already spoken to Kelly Sue.
Can you please talk to your husband? Tell him to come on our show.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
in the meantime, we're going to talk about some news. So usually that's about the time I play the news intro. But this week, I'll still play the news intro. A sequel to Man of Steel has been announced, directed by Zack Snack Snyder and written by David S. Goyer. It's likely to be titled Batman vs. Superman.
Meanwhile, Marvel has announced that the Avengers sequel will be called Avengers Age of Ultron. However, writer-director Joss Whedon has confirmed it will not be based on the comic of the same name. Confused? You will be.
Thank God, though. On the small screen, Arrow Season 2 sees actress Katie Lotz as Dinah Drake, or Black Canary. Also joining are Michael J. White and Kevin Alejandro playing villains Bronze Tiger and Sebastian Blood, respectively.
Okay. In comics news, Kieran Gillen and Adam Kubert will team up from November for Wolverine Origin 2, a sequel to the 2002 miniseries. Haven't we already had enough Wolverines?
Marvel are releasing something called Revolutionary War, a limited series written by Andy Lanning and Alan Cowsell in January 2014. It promises a return to Marvel UK characters and the Marvel UK imprint. I like that of the easier of the two names in that headline, I stuffed the easier one up.
Marvel will launch two new X-Men series, because we don't have enough already. Amazing X-Men by Jason Aaron and artist Ed McGuinness. And Longshot saves the Marvel Universe.
Oh, finally.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Writer Chuck Palahniuk has announced that he is working on a sequel to Fight Club in graphic novel form.
Okay. The Smash, Sydney manga and anime show, returns on 10th of August 2014, offering cosplay, artist alleys, and you just moved the page. And more will be there.
The Eisner Award winners were announced, with Saga, Hawkeye, as we mentioned, and Building Stories, all big winners. Check our website for the full list. David, there is a lot of news there to get through.
There
is. That we might want to talk about. Let's start with the movies, because the Batman Superman movie, people kind of lost their shit over.
They did.
And actually, before we go on, I was going to play a little bit of audio from Zack Snyder's announcement of that, where he got an actor to announce, give the audience a bit of a tease about what might be coming.
Harry Lennox was in Man of Steel, and the reason I brought him out is because his voice is just way better than mine. Now, what he's gonna read you a little thing. He's gonna read a little thing. And some of you will recognize it, and we're not adapting this thing, but it is the thing that will help tell that story.
I want you to remember, Clark, in all the years to come, in all your most private moments, I want you to remember my hand at your throat. I want you to remember the one man who beat you.
Let's not kid ourselves. They're adapting the Dark Knight Returns.
Well, they said they're not. They're not doing it, but basically it's going to be Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, they're adapting that last part, and they're going to expand on that. But that's where they're grabbing their material
from. Yeah, no, look.
Wouldn't have read that passage if that's not what they were going for.
I know we've only got limited time today, but I have to play this. This is the similar passage being read by Peter Weller.
In all the years to come, in your most private moments, I want you to remember the one man who beat you.
because it's cool.
Yeah, and that's already been done, people.
Yeah. So, look, I'm despite everything, I am still excited by that idea of Batman and Superman live action on screen.
I'm really excited about the idea. I just don't want Zack Snyder to direct it.
Oh, I don't mind Zack Snyder directing. I just don't want David S. Goyer to
write it. All right, so better. I agree with you. I just don't want David Goyer to screw this one up.
Okay, the other big confusing news was the Age of Ultron news.
Now, I'm taking this in two ways.
Okay, look, there's a couple of things that have come out since then. Joss Whedon has confirmed that it'll be an Ultron origin story, but Hank Pym won't be inventing him. So my theory is that now that Tony Stark's got all this free time after blowing up all of his tech, he invents Ultron and we go from there.
Well, my son actually had a really good theory. My son always kind of thinks laterally outside of the box. And he said, what if Tony Stark is no longer Iron Man? Spoilers for Iron Man 3, but we know that he's kind of reached the end of that pinnacle, but still wants an Iron Man out there to protect everybody. So he's made Jarvis be Iron Man. And then Jarvis basically becomes Ultron.
Actually, that's interesting. I like that. Good thinking.
So, because apparently one of the teasers for this has been an Iron Man head that turns into Ultron. It was shown at Comic-Con. We didn't see it. It's not out publicly. But
and there's been a lot of hints that Vin Diesel will be playing the Vision.
Right.
So that would fit in nicely with that.
Now, the reason why I'm on two minds on this is because in Joss I trust. Okay, and I sit there and go, I'll take anything. But I look at it and go, there is a fundamental thing here that I don't see why it's so hard to do, which is to introduce Hank Pym into the film. We don't need to introduce Ant-Man at this point. Just introduce Hank Pym because we know there's an Ant-Man movie coming.
They're probably holding a little bit back. We don't know what's happening.
Yeah, I think Tony Stark didn't create Ultron. So, and I know the cinematic universe and the comic universe are two different things. That's a pretty glaring hole.
One final thing I'll say before we move on is the whole, there's going to be some confusion around the Black Canary, Dinah Drake, Katie Lotz thing, which is because we thought, okay, well, there's Laurel Lance, she's probably going to be, well, she wasn't, I mean, her name is slightly different and all that kind of thing. What they've done here, Dinah Drake is the Golden Age Black Canary. So what, I guess what they're doing is like, we're right back and, you know, our current Black Canary is actually the second Black Canary to take on the mantle.
Right.
So I'm guessing what we're doing is we're going all the way back to the original. I mean, this is what they're saying. This is the origin of Green Arrow. So this will be the original Black Canary.
Fair enough.
And then so a second Black Canary will
so,
take on that
so
mantle.
So our Lance in the series at the moment could potentially still be the second one.
Yes.
Because we've established that she can fight.
Yeah.
And we've kind of, you know, we've kind of headed in the direction we think we could, and she's hot, we could make her Black Canary. You know what I mean? She'd look good in fishnets.
But the person that they've hired to play Katie Lotz does look the part.
Oh, she's gorgeous.
She's absolutely 100% Black Canary. I can see that, and it's a dead...
If you watch that sizzle reel that you put up on the site,
yes,
you can actually see her in action.
Yes, briefly in action. She's a little bit darkened, but you know, not giving away too much. But that sizzle reel's lives up to its title.
I was actually watching it going, but this is all footage from season one.
Halfway
through, it kicks in and you go,
it's sort of like a previously on Green Arrow. Yeah.
So stick with it. If you've only watched the first half and then gotten bored thinking it's just a rehash, stick with it.
There's lots of, I'm surprised, given that they only started shooting in July, I'm surprised how much they've shot. I suppose, look, running out of time for the new stuff, but the other big news that came out of that, which you didn't mention, was the Guardians of the Galaxy stuff, where they confirmed that Karen Gillan from Doctor Who, formerly from Doctor Who, will be playing Nebula. So she's got connections to Thanos there. She's actually shaved her head to do that.
I think shaving her head, she should have played Moondragon personally.
Yeah. And also the other thing was that they've cast Jimon Hounsou. He's going to be a character in there as well. So, it looks like he will be the kind of person that arrests Peter Quill and brings him aboard the prison ship where he's introduced to the other Guardians. And knowing that, I've got a little bit of a fanboy tingle happening.
Still no word Rocket on the voice of Rocket.
Or Groot.
Well, Groot only says one word, so...
What he says is...
So what they could just do is just lift that audio and just put that into the film.
Because he says it in various ways. I am Groot.
Groot, it's a question mark.
I am Groot.
And there's also that wonderful line at the end of the Guardian series where he goes, I am...
David, still more excitement than you can fit into an exciting box inside of an exciting shop on Exciting Lane.
Absolutely.
In the Exciting District.
And anybody out there who is still going, I have no idea what Guardians is and I don't know what this is about, please, once again, we tell you, go read that series and be prepared for what is going to be a science fiction epic. This is sensational stuff.
Just look at the cast and then you'll get an idea of how big this is going to be.
Yeah. No, this is as I said it during our review of Guardians. It has the potential to be this generation's Star Wars.
But before we get on to that film, it's still to the end of next year. Let's have a look at a film that we saw this week as we hit up our pick of the week.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
My employer is dying. He wants to thank you for saving his life all those years ago. It's an honor to meet the Wolverine.
That's not who I am anymore.
After the war, the Yashida family business became Japan's largest. He made advances that have saved millions of lives.
I want to offer you a gift, Logan. You have struggled long enough. Your ability to heal can be passed to another. Allow someone else to shoulder your burden. Logan-san, I can make you mortal.
Trust me, Bob.
You don't want what I've got. I'm not ready to die.
You're bleeding.
Just keep moving.
I'm not healing. She did this to me.
This flesh is weak now.
Hey, Bob.
What are you?
A chemist, a capitalist, a viper.
So you can see the future.
I saw you die.
We will accept your surrender with respect.
Is that all the men you brought? Your grandfather called me a Ronin. Samurai without a master. Who has no reason to live.
Was he right?
Yeah, so that's the best trailer around because it pretty much tells you the entire plot of the film in audio bites.
It does, doesn't it? I was just listening because it's interesting because I've seen the trailer. When you actually listen to it, you go, yep, there's that story beat, there's that story beat, there's that story beat.
Look, we're going to stay up front because we've got a bit of movie review to get through. And we've actually got a few bits of feedback about the movie from Facebook as well, so we'll read those out. But the great thing about this movie is that, as we sort of implied at the start, is that it is a standalone X-Men film that doesn't mind cutting back on the rest of the mutant world and focusing on character. And to me, this is probably the most character-driven X-Men film to date, with basically the character they've been using to prop up the whole franchise the whole time. I really love this movie. I love the fact that that Wolverine is such a wise ass in this film as well. He's got some great things. I'll play a clip in a moment where it's him actually intimidating someone that has some minor spoilers in it. But I think I love this film because it was a mature character film. I love the film because it's got some amazing action sequences, and I love the film because it's set in Japan and mostly based off that Chris Claremont book that we did last week.
I was about to say that. The thing I really enjoyed about this one, I also really enjoyed this film, and I think I enjoyed this film because, A, it is adapted from that series and those two X-Men books to a degree, but then goes off in its own thing to make it a feature film. So in the comic book series, Wolverine is basically a Ronin from the beginning. He's well aware of the Japanese culture and blah, blah, blah.
He knows Japanese.
In this, he is an outsider. He has been dragged there. He knows nothing about the culture. He's a barbarian, basically. So that strays away from that. The Yukiko character and the Mariko character are there, but they're not formed the same way as in the book. I really love the fact they've kept elements from the book, enough of it so that you can recognize it, such as the bear in the opening sequence and that whole hunter sequence.
Yeah,
but
nice.
They just restructured the story element around it as to why he's there and so forth. So I really did like that about it. The thing I really like most about this film, though, is it's the most unsuperhero superhero film ever made. It is basically a drama that has punctuation marks, which are fantastic action sequences, leading up to a big climactic action sequence, granted. But the film is about the character. It is about Logan coming to terms with events that have taken place in the canon of the films, which we won't spoil here, but coming to terms with those.
Basically the end of X-Men The Last Stand.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And he's basically given up being a hero, saying, I'm not going to help people anymore. I don't care about anybody else. I just go away. And then it's about his journey back to realizing that he needs to help
people. It's the classic hero's journey, because he literally has his powers, as you heard from the trailer, he literally has his powers taken away from him.
Mm.
So he has to reassess who he is as a person.
And he feels pain for the first time. And he feels
not
weakness.
Just the emotional kind.
That's right. And he feels weakness for the first kind. And he's bleeding and he's got wounds. And it's like you sit there going, this is all new to him, you know, because he usually gets a sword driven through him. He pulls the sword out, he heals. Done.
Which makes, because the third act, basically, it's a big final showdown between him and, like, you saw it in the trailer, minor spoiler, Silver Samurai, because that's based from the comic as well. In order for that to work on screen, you had to have that long contemplative section in the middle. Some people have accused that end section of being a bit tacked on, being a bit ridiculous compared to the rest of the film. But no, for me, that because the film's so contemplative, because the film is so reflective, we've earned that heroic ending.
That's correct. And when you also are, he has made his journey, he's become the hero again, and now he's the hero, he fights the big bad.
Now, we talked about how it departed from the Chris Claremont comic. One of the departures was the character of Yukio, who's really a seductress in that she's an assassin, but she seduces Wolverine in a lot of ways. In this movie, she's a complete nutball. she's really quirky. No, I love her character in this, played by Rila Fukushima. But I'll just play a little bit of audio to explain just why we love this character.
This sword is hundreds of years old. It was named Danzan by the first samurai who used it. Danzan means separator in Japanese. The ideal weapon for separating head and limb from body. Like so. I'm packed him back.
Like so.
Because she's the one who basically brings Wolverine back into the world.
Ooh.
Convinces him to come to Japan. And she's just as much a victim in the end of the big bad's plot as Wolverine is. So they kind of share this journey together in a lot of ways. They both have a coming of age kind of journey throughout this as well. Because most of the movie is Wolverine on the run with Mariko, who he meets in Japan, who is the granddaughter of the man who...
Which is a slight departure from the comic book, because in the comic book, he already knew her, and he went to Japan to find her.
Which is what someone actually said to me, why couldn't they just adapt it as it was? Well, to adapt it as it was, you have to have
backstory.
40 issues of backstory where you're introduced to Mariko, because the X-Men visit Japan earlier in that thing, and I think that's when they bring Sunfire into it, isn't it?
Sunfire came in the giant size X-Men, then left, and then they brought him back in.
And that's when they introduce Mariko, and he meets her there, and he falls in love with her and so forth. There's elements of a couple of different comics in this as well. There's also a comic I just read this week by Brian K. Vaughan, which is a really great book called Wolverine Logan. It's just simply called that. And in that book, it establishes that he was in Japan during the Second World War when the bombs were dropped.
Right.
And then he's not only at the epicenter, he's actually in Hiroshima in the comic, but he's also fallen in love with a woman there. And it kind of explains why he's so intoxicated by Mariko when he meets her in the comics, because she reminds him of this woman that he was his first love, basically, because he thought no one would ever love someone who looked like him. You know, because in the comics, he's not Hugh Jackman. In the comics, he's a short, hairy little guy.
he was a young Ron Jeremy.
He's a little hedgehog.
Yeah.
So That's why I think this is a sort of a pastiche of a couple of comics, but as you said, also drawing from the film universe as well.
It had to be, and that's the thing when you're creating an adaptation. And this is, I mean, I'm a little bit hard on film sometimes because I go, oh, but that's not what I wanted. But we always have to always come back to the fact that in an adaptation, you have to adapt.
Yes,
because we don't have 40 years of comic books in the background, and the people, and let's face it, the people who read the comic book, somebody pointed out, I think it was. One of the other podcasters out there I was listening to this week, who basically said that yes, they may be changing things for Age of Ultron coming up, and then maybe, you know, Hank Pym, and people are going, but what about that? And they're saying, yes, but you know, in the vast scheme of things, you think about it, 100,000 people read that comic book, whereas 300 million people saw the movie.
Yes.
So it's like there's a different universe here.
It's called the Marvel Cinematic Universe for a reason.
So, you know, they've got to adapt for their audience. Those 300 million people who saw The Avengers did not read the comics.
Look, and they've certainly adapted for the audience this time out, because Wolverine as a character, I don't think he's been, he's sort of been dropping wisecracks in the first couple of films, but I don't think he's been as funny as he has been in this film in terms of some of his dialogue. He's actually delivers the lines.
Oh, I know the line you're thinking of.
Well,
too.
No, he delivers some lines with some absolute cracking punctuation here. And it's a little sequence that's been played a lot. There's some minor spoilers in this, but I think the fun of it will override any spoilers from this clip. So let me just play this.
You have 10 words. 10 words. To explain to me why you would want your fiancé killed by the Yakuza.
You don't have the faintest idea what's going on.
How many words was that?
9.
You have 1 word left. Really?
Mariko would have never come through with the wedding. She never took to me.
Oh, really? Class act like you.
Wait, wait! No! You wanted the truth, and I told you the truth!
I didn't like it.
How did you know there's a pool down there?
I didn't.
Classic stuff. No, that's not only is it a classic Wolverine. It's. I think it's, you know, they're finally letting Hugh Jackman do what he does best, because he's the best there is. They actually let Hugh Jackman act in this a bit more, rather than just being, you know, rough and tumble. You know, I mean, the thing is, he has been the tentpole of these films. Like they wouldn't have had an X-Men universe as strong as it is without Hugh Jackman. It's the reason.
And I think he was a last minute replacement.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the most amazing.
Who originally was going to play?
It was, oh my God.
I do remember
this. Yes, no, my mind didn't.
Look that up.
We'll look that
up
as we're going.
And the fact that even in X-Men First Class, he was brought in for a cameo for that fantastic line that he had there.
It's best line in the film, actually.
And, you know, I think that this is probably the first, a friend of mine actually said this is the first X-Men film since X2, really, that he can actually promote with some sort of sense of pride. Look, you know, there's a lot I love about this film. Just while we're still looking up some information, I'll play another clip. One of the things that surprised me about this film is just how much Jean Grey was in the film. Famke Janssen appears in this film, and you see her in the trailers. And naturally, because of her fate in X-Men The Last Stand, she may not be what she seems to be, but here's just a little bit of a taste of her form in this film.
Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up.
You're here.
Of course.
Can you stay?
You know I can't.
I'm so sorry.
I know.
I'll never hurt you or anyone.
It's too late.
No!
I want someone to do like an elongated version of that, to have him doing like the Darth Vader. No.
The original actor who was cast to play Wolverine, who pulled out at the last minute, was Dougray Scott.
Oh, that's right, I do remember.
And
this
he pulled out at the last minute, and apparently they had seen Hugh Jackman in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. Was it Seven Brothers or Oklahoma? One of the two, anyway. They'd seen him on stage, and they thought he was really dynamic, so they called him in for a screen test. Apparently, he was literally cast like a week or 2 weeks out before shooting began.
Wow.
So, and he was working out to get his body and stuff during the shooting of the film. So they had to shoot like the shirtless stuff later in the shoot and stuff like that because he had to get buffed up for
it. And also apparently Mission Impossible 2 went over schedule as well.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So I think it would have been a very different film with Dougray Scott because I don't think Dougray Scott is nearly as charismatic.
Yeah, but he's an actor who was passed over a lot because he was up for James Bond in Casino Royale before that went to Daniel Craig. So, poor Mr. Scott.
Yeah, well, in the case of X-Men, though, I mean, it was his fault.
Yeah.
I mean, he couldn't do it. So no. It wasn't that they fired him.
Look, performance issues are very common in Hollywood.
Yeah.
I think we should just, because we're running out of time, we should sort of wind up by saying we highly, highly, highly recommend this film as geeks. We highly recommend it as comics fans, but also it's probably the best X-Men film that there has been in about 10 years.
And we also have to stress, and this is minor spoilerage, but we also have to stress that in the middle of the credits, there is a post-credit sequence.
Oh, yes.
We're not going to tell you what it is, but stick
with
it.
It's on the website, yeah. But I clearly label that a spoiler.
So if you don't want to know about it, don't read any of that. Just remember it's about halfway through the credits, and it is basically a tease for something coming.
Yes, yes, very much.
So do stick around for that because it is well worth having a look at.
It's probably worth. In fact, we have a little bit of feedback on the film from some of our readers. David, I think that's traditionally where we would play Girl from Ipanema.
I think it is. I've just got to find the girl. Where are you, girl?
Where are you, girl?
I can't find the girl.
Come on, girl. From Ipanema. It doesn't matter. You can put it in.
I'll put it in post-production.
Yeah, and this whole conversation will make no sense. Justin Pearson Smith, who actually won a double pass from us to go and see the film. Said he just watched the Wolverine, compliments with the free tickets you awesome guys gave me.
Look what I found.
Hey! He went in with very low expectations, but hey, it was a free screening. You know what I actually really enjoyed? I actually really enjoyed this one. Wolverine is written far better this time around than he was in the previous films. The movie is not oversaturated with random mutants who wink and nod at the screen, say one line of dialogue and disappear in a puff of smoke. The story is enjoyable. The focus is put on characters and not blowing up a city in a CGI mess. The cinematography is great. Hell, it's probably hard to make Japan look crap. It goes slightly limp in the third act. I disagree, but
yeah, so do I.
But overall, it's recommended. 7.5 out of 10 on a bad day. 8 out of 10 on a good day. Thanks again for the tickets. You're very welcome, Justin, and thank you very much for leaving some feedback. We also had. He also adds that the post credit sequence is one of the best he's seen since Iron Man.
Very good. Yeah. All right.
Jade O'Shea also writes in to say, just watched it. I absolutely adored it. More of a drama love story than a comic film, which was nice to change. And it wasn't afraid to take some time to tell the story, which I think is a really important point. Plus, Jackman really pulled out all the stops this time. The man looked amazing. I went in with low expectations and was blown away. And agree that the post-credit sequence literally gave me a geek boner. Cannot wait until next year. So I agree. We've got some other feedback this week while we're on the topic.
Mm-hmm.
We actually had a couple of people email us in about some various things, not all of which were Wolverine related.
Well, I've got one here if you'd like me to read it for you.
Go ahead.
This one actually says, hey, David and Richard, thanks so much for putting together such a great show. I used to check out the Film Actually podcast live stream and then jumped over to Behind the Panels. You guys give some of the best reading advice. More and more of your reviewed books are finding their way onto my bookshelves. I have also been enjoying the one-shot interviews you two have been doing recently. Thanks for keeping up the good work. Now, this is from H.C. Widget, who is a long-time listener. He used to join us on the live show. So, welcome back, H.C. Thank you for getting in touch with us.
Thanks for amazing feedback.
Yeah.
If you want to go and write that on iTunes, if you haven't done that already, give us a 5-star rating. That would be awesome. The other bit of feedback we had is, once again, from Matthew K, who has written into us again. Now, he just quickly wants to mention Oz Comic Con. We had a really great time.
Yep.
He said he had his photo taken with William Shatner, which was hilarious, cracking jokes, etc. And he also managed to meet heaps of people: Jeffrey Combs, Tom Taylor, Stuart McKinney, Bill Farmer, Rob Paulsen, Dean Rankin, and Debbie Derryberry, who plays Jimmy Neutron.
Right.
He also mentions that he had a photo taken with me. I know, I was there. And
which you can find on his Facebook page.
You can find on his Facebook page. And no, I reposted that on the Behind the Panels Facebook page.
Excellent.
And he said he hopes to see us next year and he'll contribute funds towards the Oz Comic Con crawl. Yes. Thank you very much, Matthew, and we hope a lot of you will do that. We'll have details up on the site about that.
Yeah, we haven't actually launched this proposal yet.
It's going to be for 2014, but basically from March next year, or end of March next year, when the first Oz Comic Con kicks off, we want to go around the country and do all of them. So it'll be Perth and Adelaide in March, April. It'll be Melbourne in July, and then Sydney and Brisbane around September. So that is our aim, to try and get to as many Oz Comic Cons as possible next year, as well as the other
usual. Yeah, we're going to attempt all of them, but if we can't get to all of them, we can't. But we're going to attempt a lot of them.
We're going to attempt a fair chunk of them. We'll certainly be at the first couple. We'll be at the Sydney one, and we'll be at...
We'll definitely be at the Sydney one. There's no excuse not to be at the Sydney one.
And look, I think I'll make the trip down to Melbourne again this year as well.
I want to as well, because I love Melbourne, so...
And look, it's such a great event. We'll also mention that the next thing we are going to be at, if you live in Sydney, is Smash, which is the Sydney Manga and... Sydney Manga and Anime Show. And it's its seventh year here in Sydney. They've finally graduated up all the way up to the big convention centre down at Darling Harbour. I used to go to it when it was at the Roundhouse at UNSW. So it'll be great to see that in a bigger venue. Looking forward to that. It's mostly manga and anime focus, as you can imagine, but there'll be cosplay there. There'll be an artist alley. There's going to be a Madman industry panel, which I'm looking forward to seeing. We're going to have some interviews and some chats with some of the organisers around that time as well. So they were very kind to give us media accreditation for the day. So we will be out there with bells on, as well as buttons and stickers and our cameras as usual. So we hope to see some of you there if you're also into manga and anime.
Absolutely.
But that's it for another week. Next week, we will be finally getting around to the book
that we've been
promising to do for the last couple of weeks, but we keep getting interrupted by these damn film things.
Yes.
We are going to be doing The List by Paul Bedford, which we've both read now. It's a very dark book. We recommend that you go out and support this local production and go and get a copy of the book online. Paul Bedford's a great man. He's great to chat to. We'll play a little bit more of his interview on our show. We put the whole thing
online. If you haven't seen
it,
it is actually on video. You can see the video on the embedded YouTube. On this.
If you just go to the interview section of behindthepanels.net, you can find it there. So that'll be next week's picks. We've got a few more coming up, big ones coming up in the next couple of weeks. We're going to try and get some of our regular co-hosts back in. We're talking to you, Nima and Dave. We'd love to see you guys back here and again. And also, we've got a few interviews lined up, I think, in the near future that we're going to start integrating into the shows.
Yeah, so, we had. I mean, the interviews were supposed to be like once a month, once every 6 weeks or something. But then we had these conventions. We had a whole bunch of them all together. So it's not that we have stopped doing interviews. It's just we're going back to a normal schedule.
So we're going back to reading books as well. Of course, the other movie that's on the horizon is Kick-Ass 2, which is going to be at the end of August in Australia. I know it's a little bit later than the US, but that's when we'll get around to it then. So if you're wondering why we haven't covered it before then, it's because Australia's getting its films by rowboat again. So until then, they put the cans in a little rowboat and gently push them out to sea. Until that time... this has been Behind the Panels.
How do we find more?
That's right. That's right. I kind of felt there's something else
there's something
that I normally
missing.
Say
you
there.
You can find me at geekaxley.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. And Richard,
you can find me with my head in the clouds. You can also find me on Twitter at DVDBits. You can find me online at behindthepanels.net and therealbits.com. Occasionally you can find me at Newsarama. Actually, more than occasionally these days, you can find me at newsarama.com. But until next week, I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm David McVeigh.
And this is Behind the Panels.